Good morning. I appreciate the opportunity to be here in the house of God once again. And the Lord has been talking to me for quite some time now about some things, and I have not known when would be the right time to bring it. And I feel like that this is the time, and the Lord's been dealing with me about some of these things quite a bit recently. And you might notice that I brought some extra things up here with me. So, well, let's see here. I'm going to show you what I have here. This is just a, this towel is just to protect the surface there. These are some of my most commonly used tools on my job. They're very worn, well used. I use these more than just about anything. I have, if you're listening on the recording, can't see it. I have two pry bars in the construction industry. We call them wonder bars or pry bars or flat bars. And they have a small end and a bend in it, and then a real long handle on each end, both the long end and the short end. There's a it gets really narrow, really thin. And then I have a little piece of wood here that goes down from nothing to about, this one's about a quarter of an inch thick on the other end. This one's about 8 inches long or so. This is called a shim. And I use these for installing cabinets. I haven't ever seen a kitchen floor that was completely level. And I use these on every cabinet job that I'm on. I buy them about 2,000 at a time, and I go through quite a few of them on every job. And there was an ancient Greek philosopher. I think he was Greek. I didn't do a lot of research about him, so I'm not even sure how to pronounce his name. Archimedes, something like that. He's the one that kind of developed some of the knowledge on the principles of leverage that we have today. And he made the statement, "Give me a lever long enough and a place to stand, and I can move earth itself." I use these tools for when I need something to move and it doesn't want to move. If I have a piece of molding that's on a wall, I may not be able to get this big pry bar underneath it to move it because there's not enough space there. So I'll go in with this little one. This little one goes almost to nothing, where I just wonder how in the world is that thick enough to even create, where I can pull on it without it deforming the metal, but somehow they've hardened it where it's doable. And then there are bars that are smaller even than this that I use sometimes. These are the two I mainly use. I can get into just about anywhere. There's a little article that you can find online. I've seen it different places. And I'm just going to read it real quick. "It was once announced that the devil was going out of business and would offer all his tools for sale to whoever would pay the right price. On the night of the sale, they were all attractively displayed, and a bad-looking lot they were. Malice, hatred, envy, jealousy, sensuality, and deceit And all the other implements of evil were spread out, each marked with its price. Apart from the rest lay a harmless-looking wedge-shaped tool, much worn and priced higher than any of them. Someone asked the devil what it was. "That's discouragement," was his reply. "Well, why do you have it priced so high?" "Because," replied the devil, "it is more useful to me than any of the others. I can pry open and get inside a man's conscience with that, when I could not get near him with any of the others. And when once inside, I can use him in whatever way suits me best. It is so much worn because I use it with nearly everybody, as very few people yet know it belongs to me." I thought about that, and I'll have to say, this is how I use these tools. When I want something to move, and I don't have the power to lift it, don't have the ability, if it has a gap, the size of, this is about an eighth of an inch right here. If there's an eighth of an inch gap underneath it, I know it's about to move. Because I can put this tool under it, and then I can put this wedge right here behind it. And even if it's 1,000 pounds, it's going to go wherever I want it to go. There might be some tearing and ripping. You might see nails and screws pop loose. I can lift with this little tool several times, multiple times the force with which I could pick up. Sometimes I can't get in with this, so I use this. This is the little one. And I'll take it. I actually meant to bring a hammer up here, but I didn't. Sometimes you have to have about an eighth of an inch gap to get in with this one. Sometimes I don't have that. Sometimes there's no gap at all. And so I'll take this, and it's got a point that comes all the way to a point here. And then I'll take a hammer and I'll drive it in under there. And little by little, I'll wedge that thing in there. And then I use this shim in conjunction with it. And I'll push a shim right next to it. And I'll hammer on this bar and I'll hammer on the shim. And the point is to get it. You know, this little bar can't even hardly lift anything. I can't lift much with this. For two reasons. For one, I'm afraid it'll break it. And for two, I don't have enough leverage to really do something with it. But I can, with this little bar, I can get it to where I can get this bar under it. And when I get this bar under it, the game's over. I'd like to go to Numbers 21 in the 4th verse. Please pray for me. I need it this morning. I have a real burden on my heart about this. This is talking about the children of Israel. And they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to compass the land of Edom. And the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. And the people spake against God and against Moses, "Wherefore have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no bread, neither is there any water, and our soul loatheth this light bread." And the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much people of Israel died. And I believe you can examine the scriptures and find that these fiery serpents or a type or a shadow of what sin does to people and the disastrous effects it can have on people. It'll hurt you, it'll sting you, it'll ruin your life. The things, but this was something that came and they set the stage for it. They didn't have to have the serpents. God allowed the serpents to come and bite them. But it said that they were much discouraged because of the way. Remember the little article I just read? They said, "What is this tool?" And he said, "Well, it's discouragement." I'm not really preaching about discouragement this morning entirely. there's actually something that's behind discouragement. Something that's deeper. Something that's a lot more dangerous, but a whole lot more subtle. When somebody's discouraged, it's all over the face of them. And you can tell when somebody is discouraged, and that in itself is not always even wrong. But sometimes people get, sometimes people's emotions go up and down. Mine do. And I've learned that the Lord wants me to push right through that and not pay attention to what my emotions are telling me. But there was a reason why these people were discouraged. It said they were discouraged because of the way. And then they leveled some accusations against Moses. You didn't bring us out here for our good. You brought us out here to die. I'd like to point out to you that this is the 21st chapter of Numbers. And this is right after, or not too long after, the people, this very same people, was rejected from going into the land of Canaan because of their lack of faith in God. And so, Lord help me here. I'm trying to get this out in a way that, like the Lord gave it to me. It said in the fourth verse, the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. The Lord never had that way planned out for them from the beginning. He intended for them to go into the land of Canaan. He intended for them, by this time, they were supposed to be conquering giants. They were supposed to be enjoying the milk and the honey. But because there was a heart, in Hebrews 3, it says, an evil heart of unbelief. They stayed right there in the wilderness. And the way was, the way that they were much discouraged at was of their own making. Yes, it was the path that God led them through. But He was having great mercy on them. Even after they didn't believe in Him to go into the land of Canaan, He still fed them with manna every day. He made their shoes where they wouldn't wear out, and their clothes and all that. He sustained them through all that time. And it said that the people were much discouraged because of the way. And so then they spake against God and against Moses. Wherefore or why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? They leveled this accusation against them. Then they said, for there is no bread. And then they said, neither is there any water, and our soul loatheth this light bread. And I've remarked before that the word light here means this disgusting, worthless food. It's something that doesn't profit us at all. Never mind the fact that this was bread from heaven and that God was giving them everything they needed for them to thrive in the wilderness where they were, in the way that they had generated for themselves, because they would not go into the land of Canaan. You see, this is one of the devil. If you want a title to this message, I would probably say something like the devil's levers and the devil's shims, or the devil's leverage. I don't know, something like that. The people were discouraged, but the reason that they were discouraged was that there was an element in them in which they would not admit, I had a problem here. Now, I was wrong. They didn't want to admit that they were the ones responsible for the way. And so when the way became discouraging, then they murmured against it and said, this is Moses' fault. This is Aaron's fault. This is the leader's fault. This is God's fault. I don't know who all they blamed, but the ones that needed to take the blame were themselves. And they should have said, Lord, this is how I'm feeling. I know that I would be in the land of Canaan today if it were not for the evil heart of unbelief that I had. This is my doing. Lord, I don't want to be that way. Will you help me? And you know, I believe the story would have been a lot different. But instead, they had an evil heart of unbelief, but yet they were not willing. It was pride. You know, pride, I believe, is the gateway sin. It leads to so many different other things where we have this thing. It's like a shim. You have a little bit of pride in there, and it's like a shim. Okay? As long as I can't get this tool, this bar, under a cabinet, I can't do anything. If it's a big, tall cabinet, I can't do anything. If I come to a job, I can have my hammer, and I can have my screw gun, I can have my nail gun, I can have my saws, I can have everything, but if I don't have these two little bars, I pretty much might as well go back home because and not come back until I have these things and some shims to go with them. Because as long as I can't get under there to manipulate those cabinets to go where I want them to go, I'm not going to accomplish anything. And if the people would have had their hearts clear before God, where they would have said, "This is my doing, this is it." But they didn't do that. And so they kept this thing right here in there. And it stayed there. And so the devil was able to get in there and use that to cause them to say things and do things that maybe they never would have wanted to say. And that's what the devil will do to you and I. If we allow a point to be, if we allow something in there that acts as a shim, if you will, I hope you'll follow along with me in this analogy. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 10 where it talks about this in what happened in Numbers. 1 Corinthians 10 and 1 says, "Moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea and were baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea and did all eat the same spiritual meat and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things were our examples, to the intent we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. Neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed and fell in one day, 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer." You know, I think of things that they seem so small. The Lord said, "Don't murmur and don't complain." You know, when we do that, I want to tell you what's behind that. If we build ourselves on the rock of Jesus Christ and we anchor ourselves down, I want to tell you that there's times I go to move something with one of these bars and I can't do it. And usually the reason is because it's bolted tight in such a way where no matter what I do, I can't separate one thing from another. But whenever we get to where we have something in there, an element of complaining or murmuring, what's behind that really is it's an accusation leveled against God. It says, "I shouldn't have had that. God had no right to send that to me. I don't deserve that. I'm too good a person for that." That's in effect what the children of Israel were doing. And when that kind of thought gets in there, the devil is able to take that and to put his little wedge in there and do anything pretty much that he wants to do with it. Things that we can say, "I would never do that." You know that I'm not, when I go to Walmart, well, I'm getting ahead of myself just a little. Let's go to James and read this first. James 1 and 13. We talked about this a little bit Wednesday night Bible study. I appreciated the discussion very much. It says, "Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death." When I go to Walmart, I don't have any temptation to go steal an expensive thing off the shelf and run out the door with it. I don't have that, okay? If I go, if I'm on the job and somebody makes me upset, somebody does something, I don't have the temptation to shoot him, all right? I don't have that temptation. But you know, there are things that I'm tempted with, and they're little things. They're things like, you know, that person really shouldn't have said that. And then we have this little rankling in our hearts where it's a, we think about it, we dwell on it, and it comes in a real reasonable way. We'll get into that a little bit more. Or how about this? It says, every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. What this is talking about is that we have natural things that we are attracted to. Some of them we can't ever entirely get rid of. Things that our mind and our body are attracted to. Some of those things are just part of us being human. But did you know we have a lot to do with how much attraction or how much we let those things present ourselves to us, how much sway they have over us? We have a lot to do with that. I said before, I'm not tempted. When I go to Walmart, I'm not tempted to steal. I'm just not. But I have known people that if you took them to a place like that, they would be tempted to do those kind of things. And it's because they had not established the safeguards in their lives. I went somewhere with someone one time that I was trying to help. And we went into a situation that normally I wouldn't think anything about. Yes, there was a little bit of temptation there. But it was something that I felt like I was pretty far removed from it. And I was. And it was not enough where I felt like, you know, I can't do this because I'm not strong enough to handle it. I felt like I was. And I was strong enough. By the power of God, I was strong enough to handle it. But when I got to this place with my friend, I realized that my friend didn't have any kind of safeguard like that at all. And the things that they started saying and the interactions that they started having with the other people, I realized really soon, this person is about to get into trouble. Really, really big trouble. You know that we have a lot to do with the level of temptation that can come to us. This is the process. It says that every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. All right, so that's one of these things. It's reasonable to me. It's something that comes. It's natural to me. And so, if we let a little bit of it in, let me think of a good example. You know, I like ice cream. I like it a lot. I like cake too, and I like pie. I like all those things. Never heard anybody preach against any one of them. And I'm not going to do it this morning, because there's likeliness I'll have some of it today. That's not why I wouldn't preach against it. But you know what I'm saying. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But you know that we can have a way where things can appeal to us in a way where we don't have anything in us that says, that's enough. No, this is the limit. I'm not going to do this anymore. And so then you have people that they get in a situation and they say, you know what, I can do this because it's lawful. I can do this. You can't tell me I can't do this. There's nothing in the scriptures against it. But when we don't curb the things that are natural parts of us, do you know that in 2 Corinthians it says, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but they're mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity what? Every wicked thought? Every thought that's lustful or angry or... No. Taking into captivity every thought. You don't let your mind just run free about anything. It's not that you can't think about anything, but there has to be a governing principle. It's something that the Lord gives us the responsibility. Lord, help me to be able to control the things I think about, and to control the things that I do, and to have a governing principle where the devil's not able to get in there with one of these levers. Because he comes in a reasonable way. And he tries to start conversations with us in those areas that we have that we have protected and said, you know what, I can do this. I can do this. And then we keep that, and then we may fall over and over again in the same place. Because the devil uses that same place over and over again, and we'll look at the end of it and say, oh, I never wanted to do that. It tears me up. It tears who I am. It does damage to my family, and it does all these things. And then we say, you know, this is wrong. I'm not going to do this. But a lot of times we don't really guard the thing that these levers are powerful. I can get in there, and once it's in there, I can do anything I want to, pretty much no matter how heavy it is. It says in Romans 8 and 13, for if you live after the flesh, you shall die. But if you through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live. This is talking about people that want to live for God, but they don't really have their flesh into subjection. They don't have their mind into subjection. They don't have their tongue in subjection. And they say things, and afterward, and they do things. And you know, the devil will come and he'll use that as leverage to get people in a place where they never wanted to go. And they will tell you, I never wanted to go there. And they might cry and say, you know, I'm so sorry. And the grace of God just wasn't there for me. I got in a place, you know, where the grace of God was there for you? All the way back when the devil was trying to hammer in this little shim. That's where the grace of God was there for you. And then by maybe a lack of self-control, or you know what, this is lawful, so you can't tell me what to do here because this is not wrong. You know, there's another principle involved there. It says, neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. So you can see the chain of events, what happened to the people of Israel. They didn't believe, and so they didn't enter into the land. And then they refused. They said, you know what? I want to live for God. I still want to be His people. You can look at how they did this and how they served. And right before this chapter, they went and God said, I want you to destroy this people. And they did that. They did mighty things for the Lord. But they still had this thing in there, in their mind. It really wasn't my fault. It's not. It was. And you know, the devil came in there and he took advantage of it. And so because it wasn't my fault, it's somebody else's fault. Why are we here? Why are we here in the wilderness? Why are we hate this light bread, and we hate, and then the serpents came and it bit them and they died. And James said, you get something in there and then it brings forth sin, and when it bites you and it's finished, it brings forth death. A chain of events that starts off with such a little thing. And I'm not really even preaching about pride exclusively this morning. This can happen in many different ways. It says in Hebrews 12 and 14, follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. For ye know that how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. I know we're kind of running late this morning, but I feel like that I would fail the Lord if I didn't bring a few more things out. And so if you'll bear with me, I want to talk about some of these things this morning. You know the story about Jacob and Esau. Esau came from the field and he was faint. In Genesis 25, it talks about it. Esau said to Jacob in the 30th verse, feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint. Therefore was his name called Edom. And Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. Here's the leverage coming in now. And Esau said, behold, I am at the point to die. You know, the devil will use our own weaknesses in times. You know that he shouldn't have got to that point where he was faint enough where he would even be tempted really to sell his birthright. Because once you get to that point, there are times when we get in situations where we really can't stand up anymore. And the Lord does not want us to get to that point. I have discovered that there are times, there are situations that I have to stay away from. Not because the situation is in and of itself wrong, and it may be different for every one of us. But there are situations I have to stay away from because the devil can use that in a weakened state. You know where your weakened state is. It might be if you get super tired. Or it might be in a situation where you get frustrated or something like that. It's different. I have heard people talk about different situations where their weak point is, and their weak point is not my weak point, but I have weak points too. And Esau got to the point where he started reasoning in his mind. And that reasoning was generated by the weakness he was experiencing. And you can look at the whole situation and say, well, what would you have done? What would you have done if you would have been Esau? You know, the Bible calls Esau a profane person. Somebody that the Bible strongly condemns. Because he got in a point where the devil was able to leverage him to do something he never... If you would have gone to Esau the day before and said, Esau, what would it take for you to sell your birthright? Esau would have said, are you kidding me? There's nothing. There's nothing that I could use, that you could use on me to get me to sell my birthright. It's too valuable. But then he got in a place where he was all faint. And you know, he should have stopped and taken some nourishment before that. He should have maybe his heart, well, it said that he was a hunter and he did all this, and you know, maybe he should have had a little more self-control, paced himself and said, you know what? I'm getting hungry. When I get really hungry like this, I don't think rationally, so I'm going to stop and I'm going to get a snack. Maybe he had a reputation. Esau always comes back with a kill. Esau is the best hunter. And maybe he was trying to maintain that image. You know what? I haven't got one today. And if I don't come back, if I come back and I don't have anything, I'm not going to have that esteem in the eyes of the people anymore. They're not going to think the same way. And we just can't have that. I got to stay until, I don't know. I'm speculating a little bit. But there were, for some reason, for whatever reason, he stayed out to the point where he started reasoning with himself. Jacob didn't help him at all. Jacob was after his birthright, and the devil's after yours. And he said, sell me your birthright. Here, smell. He probably held the bowl under his nose. Smell the beans. That's what it was, a bowl of beans. I did the research. It means, pottage means lentils. And, or stew. And Esau said, you know what? I'm about to die. Can you see where the reasoning was wrong here? What about Hagar? Remember what happened to her? She was about to die in the wilderness too. And the Lord supplied her with sustenance. And the Lord could have supplied Esau there too. And instead of coming up with his own reasoning and saying, you know what? I'm about to die anyway. It's not going to do him any good. And the only brother I have left is Jacob. So he's going to get it. I might as well eat and get better and go on my way. And I won't have the birthright anymore, but at least I'm going to live. The whole argument there was predicated upon the assumption that he was going to die. Where was God in his mind? You know, the whole, this was a, you know, the bottom of this all was a lack of trust in God. And whenever we get to the point where we really don't trust God, you know, the devil can use that to leverage us to do things and say things or not do things that we would have never, even the day before, predicted that we would do. Sometimes I use what I... You ever heard the word blitzkrieg? It's a German word. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right, but that's... The Germans used it in World War II. Very highly effective tactic. They would use the shock and awe factor to subdue an entire country in a single day. Poland, they did it to Poland. They came in, lightning and, you know, tanks and airplanes and just a tremendous force. And they used that. And they wiped out, they didn't even really, there wasn't really much of a battle. I mean, Poland didn't have heavy losses, I don't think, any of that. But they just melted because the enemy came so strong. And there, you know, sometimes I use that when I'm setting cabinets. Whoever's with me to help me, I'll say, hey, come here. Look, I've got this cabinet and I can't even get my shim under it. It's wedged in here so tight. I'm not trying to move it. I want to move it 2 inches, but I know you and I cannot move it 2 inches. But I want to kick this thing. You kick, and I'll be ready with this thing. And at the same time you kick, I'm going to try to get the point of it in there. That's all my goal is. My goal is not to try to move the cabinet. It's not to try to... I know we're not strong enough. My goal is only to get this in. If I can get the point of this thing in, I've won. I've got it made. And then when I get the point of this little shim in, then I get this metal bar. And I'll start hammering it in. And sometimes I can be 10 minutes just leveraging something. Do you know the devil has a plan for you and for me? And it's not just a one-day plan. He has plans and he's working on us for years sometimes. He'll come to us. He'll come to us with a shim. And it's something that feels good to us. It's a legitimate, something that's legitimate. They didn't treat you right. I'm picking on that, okay, because it's easy for us to understand. But he can do this in many different ways. And it's a reasonable thought, and maybe it's true. They didn't treat you right. Did they? Do you know that Satan is not concerned about us establishing the truth about every situation? That's not his end goal. It's not his goal that we know exactly how the situation was. His goal is that we will talk and we'll open a dialogue with him. Well, no, they didn't treat me right. Well, how do you feel about that? Well, I don't feel really very good. well, you know, they had it in for you. They meant to do that. And maybe they did. Or maybe you feel like, you know, this is how, and then you think, you know, this is how they are. This is how they are. They're just that type of person. And you know, that's a shim in itself. And you assume things about people and you can get it in there. And then the devil can use those things to pry and get us to do all kinds of things and have all kinds of attitudes. I have it at my house. I have a section of concrete that sticks out from my basement. It's a patio. And I like it, but I'm going to have to do something about it soon because there's grass growing up. It's not growing except where there's cracks. And I've often wondered how in the world, to marvel to me, that a plant can get through that crack and that a seed can even fall. But it does. It happens. Those little seeds, they come from here and there and everywhere. And they fall in that little crack and they find a little bit of soil. And they're able to grow. And you know, a little seed can't do anything by itself. But when that thing starts to grow, I've seen it push up concrete. I've seen it push it to the side. I've seen it buckle it with forces. I use jackhammers for things like that. So the devil will come with all kinds of different methods. And all he wants to do is get a little bit. Let us recognize the things that the devil's doing. When he comes, you know, sometimes we feel he uses consistency. And I believe that pride is behind this one. Because you'll have an area and you'll say, you know what? I don't understand this. I don't fully understand it. Lord, help me here. I'm not sure how I can... how I can explain this one. We'll have a... you may think, well, this is what the balance is on this one. And you have a chain of reasoning. And so because of this, I'm going to do this over here because I want to be consistent. I want to give you a caution this morning. God, it is more important to stick with holiness than consistency. All right? I don't misinterpret what I'm saying. Sometimes we don't properly understand the balance about something. But we try to be consistent. And you know what? That can have a human origin more than a godly one. I want people to think that my chain of reasoning is correct. Don't want to look like I'm not on top of it. And so I'm going to do this and this and this. But when you step back and look at it, sometimes there's fruit in there that's not of God at all. I would rather go back to the measuring line of Jesus Christ and His gospel and say, you know what? I don't understand. There are people that I have talked to and they'll say, well, what about this? And I'll wonder, well, why are you asking that question? And I'll kind of answer it and I kind of feel, I'm not sure why they're asking this. And then they'll spring another one. Well, if you say that, then I can do this. It could be children that do that, and a lot of times it's not children. And I know that a lot of times we as human beings, our natural inclination is to look for justification for what we're doing in our life. And we try to get it from every source possible. We want people to approve of what we're doing. I want to tell you that instead of trying to be totally consistent and being looking good on the outside, go back to Jesus Christ and say, Lord, how do you want me to do this? And sometimes you need to step back and zoom out and say, you know what? I have this chain of reasoning, but what is it making me do? What is the fruit of it? How is it ending up? Am I justifying this awful action over here or what I'm doing because of a chain of reasoning? Well, I've built this and this and this. And then sometimes we can get the idea. You know, I appreciate the Sunday school lesson. And I appreciate our teaching that Christians can live above sin. We have the power to live above sin. through Jesus Christ, through the Holy Spirit, through the atoning blood, we have the power to live above sin. Do you know that sometimes that it's easy for us when we do something that we know in our heart is wrong, we can say, that wasn't wrong because Christians don't sin. And you know the devil, as long as we won't deal with it, and as long as we won't go back and say, I don't understand why I did it. I don't understand exactly what I did or even what I was thinking, but I know it was wrong and I did wrong. And Lord, I'm sorry. Do you know that as long as we have a denial in there, we've got an opening for the devil to work time and time again in the future. I don't know how many times, it's one of the most frustrating situations when I'm installing cabinets. I don't shim it just from the bottom, but a lot of times the wall's not plumb either, and so I'll put a shim against the wall behind the cabinet. Well, sometimes when I start screwing it in, the cabinet will be pulled forward for whatever reason a little bit, and it's just enough for my shim to fall behind that cabinet, and then it's back there. And then I can reset it, I can re-level it, I can push against it, I can use hammers, I can do anything I want to. But as long as that shim is back there behind that cabinet, I can't set it where it needs to be set. The only way at that point to set that cabinet is to take the cabinet completely out. Even if I've got it screwed into the next cabinet and I've got it shimmed up properly from the floor and all that, got it leveled, put my laser on it, there's times when the only thing to do is pull that cabinet back out, unscrew all the screws and start over again and take that shim out. Folks, when we get ideas in our minds, there are times when we're going to have to get rid of those, or else everything we do is going to be tainted, imbalanced, racked, out of level, however you want to put it. Think about Eve. And the devil came to her, and he said, now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field. And he asked the woman, yea, hath God said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? She should have never talked to him. He wasn't concerned about her establishing the truth about the matter. He wasn't concerned about her understanding exactly where the lines, the parameters were. He was trying to get her to sin, to fall. And many times when we have a conversation that the devil presents to our mind, it's one of those little roots. It could be a little root. It says a root of bitterness. But I looked it up, and it doesn't just mean bitterness is in the sense of I have a bad attitude. It could mean all kinds of different wicked devices that come in like a little tiny snake and just come in and start wedging itself in there. And before long, you've got an opening where the devil can come with this tool that he carries, and he can push you to wherever he wants you to go. I had a few years ago a dream. And in my dream, I was driving in my car on my own property. And I looked out the window, and there's a man in broad daylight standing at one of my piles of stuff that I had. And he was just calmly going through it, getting stuff to take home with him. And I said, what does he think he's doing? I'm going to go and stop him. And I drove over there to him, and when he saw me coming, in my dream, he instantly ran over to me, jerked my car door open. In my mind, I was going to go and I was going to run him off, because I felt like this is my property. This is me. I have a right to be here. He doesn't have a right to be here. I'm in my car. I'm more powerful than he is. And I came over, started going over to him. He ran over to me. He jerked my car door open. And that's when I realized I should have locked the door. I didn't lock it. came over there, and then I realized something else. I was sitting down. I was behind the steering wheel, and I'm all, you know, cramped in there in a sitting position, and he's standing, so there's another disadvantage. He had a big club in his hand. I didn't even notice it. And he swung at me as hard as he could, and he missed. And I thought, if he swings at me one more time, he's going to get me. I realized in that moment how helpless I was. Didn't have any kind of, all of a sudden the tables had been turned. And he was, instead of me being on top of the situation, he was on top of the situation. And right before he swung, again, I woke up. And immediately when I woke up, I started the song, number 302 in our book, started going through my head. My soul, be on thy guard. 10,000 foes arise, and hopes of sin are pressing hard. Something like that. To draw thee from the skies. I want you to know today that these little things that get in can cause us to be lost, because they're an avenue, they're a gateway for the devil to come in. Little root of bitterness springing in can split our spiritual life right apart. I want to end with a hopeful note. You know, I should have had the door locked. I shouldn't have been so self-confident. I think I had the window down too in my dream. In 2 Peter 1 and 5, it says, besides this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge, and to knowledge temperance, and to temperance patience, and to patience godliness, and to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness charity. For if these things be in you and abound, they make you that ye shall never be, neither be barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. In the 10th verse it says, whether the rather brethren, well maybe I'll go ahead and read the 9th, but he that lacketh these things is blind and cannot see afar off and hath forgotten that he was purged from his old sins. Wherefore the rather brethren, give diligence to make your calling and election sure. For if you do these things, you shall never fall. And I'd like to compare this verse to a panel or something that's bolted to the wall every little bit with a bolt. You know, I have those situations sometimes. When I have that, these tools don't do me a bit of good. I can pry on them. I can hit them with a hammer. And the best I'm going to do is bend my little tool here. I've got to unscrew those bolts before I have any kind of a hope. Those are what these things are in a Christian's life. We don't have to be unsure and worry. You know, I wonder if the devil's going to be able to get his pry bar into my life. We can be assured that as long as we allow these things to grow and abound and increase, that we will not fall. But every time that we fall, it's because of a lack of one of these items. If you look at every one of these items, you can go back and append or ascribe every single failure in your life to a shortage in one of the items that are listed here in 2 Peter 1. If those things be in you and abound, the original Greek here says, if they exist in you and are increasing, when you become a new creature, the Lord makes these things available to you in your life. And it is your responsibility to cultivate and grow these attributes, because these are the things that will keep you where the devil can never get at you with one of these things. You don't have to be afraid. You don't have to be unsure about, I wonder if I can make it. We can make it. We can make it all the way to the end and be saved and be encouraged and have eternal life at the end. You pray for me. May the Lord help us each one.